it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby. On today's episode,
we take ages to get to Dublin,
lose to Leinster,
and spend most of Sunday getting home.
Northampton Munster is a cracker.
Sandy Park is very windy.
And good luck to the Bulls, who are on their way to the East Midlands from Pretoria.
Well, Coley, we promised the listeners that we would jump on fresh on the back of landing and coming in. However, when we made that commitment, we didn't think that it would take 7.5 hours to get home.
Mate, through the power of positive thought and manifestation, at the end of the last week's pod, we signed off with, you know, I'll bring you straight from the airport. Obviously not thinking we'd actually be coming straight from the airport. But no, after being delayed on our budget travels, we never spent all afternoon at Dublin Airport. We finally got home. So literally I got in, had dinner, put the kids to bed, and now I'm here. So we have manifested our words into action.
Do you know what? The fact that you've had dinner is I'm jealous. I haven't even had a chance to have dinner yet. Literally walked in, showered, freshened up, and now I'm jumping on this. So that's good. That's quick turnaround for the dinner, mate. Well done.
I haven't showered yet, so I need to do that. That's after the pod. I'll be showering. It's taken us, what do we say, 7.5 hours to get home? Was it? We left at 11:30. I got in at 7:30. So I'm going to say 8 hours. The flight was airtime, I reckon, 50 minutes. I'm thinking, at what point do you just drive? I'm going to have to look at the map, and I reckon it's probably, I think the crossing's 2.5 hours on a ferry, which is probably a bit choppy, but at some point we could lower our CO2 profile, but also drive. I mean, I could have got my dad to drive me. We could have chatted. We could get some great podcast insight into middle lane drivers and other stuff.
Safe to say we never heard the trumpet, the old, another successful flight from Ryanair on time. To be fair, when you play a late night kickoff, which we had, and we will touch on the game, but you have a late night kickoff, you lose, and guys have a hell of an effort. It's a physical game. They're all pretty banged up. Go to bed late, drink a bit of the Guinness, and wake up this morning feeling a little bit sorry for ourselves. Then, like you said, what should take 50 minutes in a flight, and you get there and you check in and you do all that, and then you're literally in the airport. But we met a lot of pod lovers. A lot of people came up. They were very nice, weren't they?
We say on the way out, we were told by this one gentleman who came up to me and said he commutes on the M1, and every time I mention the M1, he's on it and he gets stuck. He's only on it for one junction, but it's always stuck. So that was nice to hear. Sharing in the misery. And then you're on the way home, you're weird. I keep warning them all, and I'm going to warn the listeners now. It's like, oh, I love the pod, love the pod. It's like, I think we've used all our best stories. I don't want to put anyone off, but I'm going to start making stories up. Like, I've always have a bit of, I like to play things down. I like to be a bit modest. And like, people are like, we get a lot of compliments, but it's like, just a warning. it could be shit from now on. I'm just saying, guys, listeners, please keep listening, but expect the worst.
To be fair, we didn't actually meet any potholes. I had so we're standing, obviously waiting around the airport, myself and Coley stood there. This lady comes over and she says about how her daughter's doing this charity run. It's an event and, you know, she'd love to get sponsorship. And would I sponsor? So I said, yeah, of course. And she was like, how much would you give? And I was like, I don't know, like £20. And then she was like, oh, that's excellent. Thank you so much. And then I had that awkward moment where I was like, does she want cash? Like, does she expect? I was like, do you want cash? She said, oh, no, I'll send you. I'll give you all the information that you can do it online. I was like, okay, thank God for that. I was like, just handing this random woman 20 quid.
Just give me your 16-digit card number, please, and the expiry date and 3 digits on the back. That we find, Ben.
Oh, my God. It was a bit of a bumpy one as well, the plane, wasn't it? Because the wind, she was a windy one.
Well, if you'd have seen the Exeter Bath game and some of the, we'll get onto the rugby analyst, but some of the blustery conditions the Kickers faced in that game, imagine flying Ryanair over the Irish Sea in similar conditions. That's how we were on Friday and also today. However, there was also, I did hear that there was, some of the fans were telling me, there was a flight came in from Stansted or something that basically, they're like, we've got one shot at this, we've got no fuel. Tried to land at Dublin, didn't, took off, went to Manchester, and they're like, oh, it's all right, we'll go back to Dublin. I'm like, no, we'll just go home to Stansted. So,
what?
I say Dublin. We actually had a hotel, Ben, outside of Dublin, so we weren't even actually in Dublin, were we? So, just to add.
No, we weren't. Let's paint this to the listeners a little bit. So, when we left the training ground, first of all, we hit the M1, which was like gridlocked, wasn't it? Like, we weren't moving anywhere.
Shock.
We eventually got to the airport. Went through, and that was all pretty smooth, apart from a bit of a bumpy ride in the flight. We then land, and we're thinking, sweet, right, the hotel will only be like, you know what I mean, we'll be in centre of Dublin. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff tomorrow night. You know, the boys will be able to go and have a coffee, have a little wonder, stretch their legs. Oh, no, we might as well have been in Galway.
Yeah, we were some way out. But, you know, we're just staying humble, Ben. That's how, you know, that's what it is. But I reckon in terms of high performance, Ryanair's not the best.
I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, absolutely recommend it if you want to go on a holiday. You know, I wouldn't say it's ideal when it comes to high performance. We were in Dublin to play Leinster, and it was an 8 o'clock kickoff at the Aviva.
You achieved a bigger top speed than I did this weekend because you got a new role in the team, haven't you?
Oh yeah, hopefully not a permanent new role, Coley. Let's you know, hopefully not permanent.
Not permanent new role, but like, I don't know. You were quite good at it, so you might have now made a rod for your own back in that regard.
I was running on waters this weekend, running on the tee with Polly, but also mic'd up with the coaches and feeding in information and feeding back what I was seeing and what they were seeing and getting to players and doing all that, which is an important role. You know, you've got to, you know, there's a lot of information coming down. You've got to kind of get that information across to the people that need to hear it in quick, simple ways. And I quite enjoyed it, you know? So I clocked up some miles, mate. I did fitness before the game when we were warming up, and I did it at the end. So you almost wait till everyone's got through the warm-up and everyone's all good. So then you can get flogging at the end. And actually the Will Finley, my S&C guy, forgot that I was running water and running on with the tees and everything like that. So he flogged me at the end. And I was like, how many more are we doing, mate? And he was like, two more. I was like, don't forget, mate, I need to get changed and I'm running water tonight. He was like, oh, okay, we'll just do one more then. One more big effort. So if anyone saw me, I was, I maxed out already. But yes, I was running on the waters. Different role for me, Sheriff.
Yeah, no, you did it well. At no point did I think, where are the waters? Because they were always there, Ben. So I'll give you a 5-star review on that, mate.
I did have an awkward moment where I was like, ran on, gave Pollard the kicking tee, line up a goal, gave him, he had a quick drink. And then the ref was next to me. And I was like, do I offer him some water or do I not even look at him? And I bottled it and I gave him some water. So I was like...
You should have held some out, but like squirted it at him. Be like, do you want some? And then just squirted, oh, sorry.
Like Marla did with Hask, yeah.
Unfortunately, we lost 36-22. It turns out Leinster are, you know, really good at rugby. And if they make a line break, they're more than likely going to finish it, which is what they did multiple times at the weekend.
You know the film Mike Bassett, England manager?
Yeah.
You know when they're like, oh, 3 cheers for Ramirez or whatever it is. It's like, 3 cheers for Gibson Park. Yeah, good on him. He's really good at support lines and then finishing them. So
we found that out. That's our expert analyst from the game. I think actually although we lost, from a neutral perspective, it was actually a good game of rugby. I thought It was competitive. I think Leinster obviously took their, I mean, fair play. Every time they made a line break, they say you got options inside, outside. They test you with their sort of the shape, which we mentioned before on the pod about how they run things, and obviously targeted areas in our defence, and they capitalised on that. But I think, you know, for us, we stuck in the game, scored before halftime, rolling ball, and kind of like the game, I'm never going to say it was in the balance, but it was a competitive game up until sort of the second half when I think, you know, Leinster, I think we threw a sort of intercept and then Leinster got away with it, or got away from us. But I think it's a neutral game of rugby. It was actually probably quite an interesting game. The only thing I will say, Ben, is though, my wife watched the game and she was informing me that the commentators were slagging off how long the scrum was taking and the results of the scrum, which, as we both know, Ben, does nothing for the game of rugby. So this is my moan of the week. Commentators, be positive about the game or shut up, especially when it comes to the scrum. I'm very protective over the scrum, all right?
Scrums need to be appreciated, mate. It's part of the game and they need to get behind it.
The thing as well, Ben, is like the game might have slowed down, but we still got to see, what, 58 points scored in the game. So obviously it wasn't that bigger effect. It wasn't like it slowed it down to a 3-0 or a 0-0 draw, was it? There was still action and all this other stuff. So like, some people will never be happy, Ben. Turns out rugby commentators are most of them.
Correct. I will say Gibson Park is a fantastic nine. Like, scoring a hat-trick is obviously, yes, there's lots of moving parts, but he is a big heartbeat to Leinster and he is a slick operator. And he looked pretty sharp last night, didn't he? A question from Neil.
Niall.
Keane Healy hobbled off, Dan. Did you chat to him after? And how's he doing?
Well, but I didn't actually get to chat to him afterwards. I had a brief chat with him during the game. We had one scrum against each other. Leinster won a penalty. As we were sort of like walking back, Keane said to me, enjoy your week off next week. So I thought, that's a nice thing to say. Cheers, mate. I will do. Obviously, Leinster were winning at this point and the other side didn't win the game. So game went on. Unfortunately, later in the game, he went down. I think it was a hamstring injury. He came off. I looked for him afterwards to say, to reciprocate the good feeling. And I was going to say to him, enjoy your week off as well, Keane. But I didn't get to see him. No, I don't know how he is. Hopefully he makes a quick recovery and turn around, because they've got a big game next weekend against La Rochelle, Ben, which we've played against both teams this year. There is a big forward pack coming to town.
Yeah, it was going to be a brilliant game, because obviously two previous finals, both those teams, La Rochelle had the better of them both times, and they are one gigantic team, La Rochelle, as we know, Cole, because we played them in the pool stages. Leinster look good when they play with tempo, and when Gibson Park's there and he's moving it around, they play, look really good. And I think they'll be trying to obviously do that with La Rochelle. But the thing with these French teams is, and you know what it's like, Coley, is you go in with the idea and the ambition of like move and play quick, make the big pack move and all that. But it's one thing saying it, it's another thing actually doing it. It's really difficult to do it because, you know, one of them takes a knee, takes their time, walk to line out, take a while to set up, take the sting out of the game. And, you know, they'll probably be trying to do that because they'll definitely be trying to pull Leinster into a power game and a sort of physical contest, whereas Leinster, I think, will be trying to break away from that and play with speed. And as they did, you know, ruck speed was unbelievable at the weekend and they'll want to do that.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I think La Rochelle, you watch them play. I mean, we saw them briefly play the Stormers this weekend. Credit to them to go over there to Cape Town on a sort of, we know what travel's like, on a sort of probably a short travel week, and then go and play and beat them over there. I know they relied on the Stormers missing the last kick of the game, but it was a great game. And, you know, them to go to Leinster, I think La Rochelle earlier in the tournament lost a couple of games, but now they're sort of fully hitting their straps. As you say, I think they'll go to Dublin and try and play the game on their tempo, as opposed to Leinster's, which will be, no, they don't play slow, but they play intense, don't they? So when they get the forwards carrying and they get people like Botti across the game line, they play a momentum-based game, which is very hard to stop because they are so big. And once they're on top of you and in behind you, they play on top of you and on top of you and top of you. So it's so hard to recover. And that's how they sort of win games. And as you say, you try to, oh, that's all right, we'll run them around, we'll tire them out. But you get to 50, 60 minutes, then empty their bench, which is another load of gigantic human beings coming on the field who then sort of up the tempo or continue that sort of momentum, physical side of the game. And it's they're a tough team to stop. But I think, you know, Leinster as a team have had two great finals between the teams, and now you're into knockout rugby, and it'll be, I'm looking forward to the game.
Yeah, I definitely am. And I think the other thing I'd say is Leinster, in my opinion, a bit like Ireland, have an unbelievable breakdown in terms of when they attack and the speed of ball they create, and how they're so efficient at moving bodies. They play real tight and they do that. And actually, La Rochelle obviously have a huge jackal threat in terms of guys stealing the ball, and they look to nick that, steal it. So I'm interested to see how La Rochelle try and nullify their attack. Do they go for the ball even more and equally how do Leinster deal with guys like Boty, because we know how incredible he is over the ball and how he does that, because Leinster will go phase. So I think it makes for a great game. The one thing also is, it's interesting, isn't it? Like you play this week, and La Rochelle coming from the Stormers, right? That is a logistical travel is absolutely crazy. Like when you think, Coley, and give the listeners a snippet here, is if we'd have won at the weekend and the Stormers would have won, which they nearly did, obviously Lebok missed a kick at the end to win it, we would have then had to fly to Bordeaux on Tuesday.
We'd have gone to Birmingham to Bordeaux to Doha, I think it was, and then Doha to Cape Town. And I think if one of the Celtic teams would have won, as in Edinburgh, I think it was, we'd have also then shared the flight with them. So yeah, rugby's, it's a bit of a, I mean, we moaned about our flight across the Irish Sea. We'd have moaned a lot more about the 24 hours of travel to Cape Town, I tell you that, listeners. Yeah, but I think like similar, the Bulls beat Lyon this weekend, so the Bulls are now going to come to Northampton, and don't they have to take four separate flights? Well, I think this squad is being split onto four different flights to get here to Northampton for the weekend on Saturday, which I think the organisers, if I was to organise European rugby moving forward, just a recommendation, is you probably want to split up the 2 weeks. So at least teams, if we are going to travel South Africa, get travel plans in and can actually book a flight for a team rather than having a short week and splitting everything up. Because you do wonder about the level playing field of things. In fairness of the sport, you sort of want teams to have best chance, so you want the best teams competing against each other, and having to make one team travel, 12 hours away, but taking 24 and stuff is a bit of a pickle in my mind.
Yeah, and I think that's the question, is what shape La Rochelle turn up at in terms of at Leinster, given that they've probably got a terrible journey coming back from Cape Town. The other thing I'd say is, with it being game and then a game the next week, it doesn't give clubs that long to sell out the games, because they won't be part of season tickets. So again, that's another thing where like you want full crowds. Now you'd say that Leinster probably will fill the Aviva, but you know if they've only got 7 days to sell it, that's quite interesting and all that dynamic. So I think there's something to be looked at a little bit there.
So briefly mentioned the Bulls there and their travel up to Northampton, so we should probably mention we're actually, as we have mentioned earlier, we spent a lot of time in Dublin Airport today, and thankfully one advantage of that was we actually got to watch a lot of Northampton Munster, which actually was a cracking game of rugby. We enjoyed it, didn't we? It passed the time well.
We did pass the time well. It was a game that was very easy on the eye. Very enjoyable, actually. I thought the breakdown was pretty ferocious in some of the collisions. It was a great last 16 game, wasn't it? George Hendy with the double try. The second try, obviously, a great finish for him, in terms of just sort of going around and finishing that. But the first try he scores, like, what a great team try. Like, so a lot of teams you expect, edge of their 22, is kind of, when the game's tight like it was, is just to set up a maul maybe, kick it off that and get the ball as far away as possible, or use the luxury of being inside the 22 and kick it off. But Munster have a good lineup, so you probably want to do that. Or you obviously hit up a forward, goalie off the lineup, don't you? Split the field, and then you've got your kicker in terms of 10 on set one way, fullback on the other, and you can use those guys to then kick as well. But Saints being Saints and the way that they play, which again is really enjoyable to watch. They go off the line out, great width from Mitchell's pass, but how Saints actually start next to the line out, like they're all set up, but as the ball's coming in, they all shift wider. They're getting to the centres, they're getting Dingwall sitting him down, they run that shape which so many teams run that we've all spoken about before, in terms of that hitting 12, 13 on a short line, it goes out the back to 10, which they run, but they're wider because they've adjusted, and Munster haven't picked up on this. Boom, goes out the back to Finn Smith, does a little pump, shoulder ball straight through, and away they go and they pick it off. But it's a great try, and I just think the vision to do it, I suppose balls to actually run that play when a game is so tight and you're on the edge of your 22, it just says a lot about their sort of attacking mindset. So with the Bulls coming to town, they're a physical team, but I think Saints, that mindset of attacking and taking them on, and I think it's a great thing to watch. It'll be a great game on Saturday for sure.
Oh, definitely. And I say, with that regards to that try, I think it's, as defence, you probably are decided that the opposition, the likelihood is they're going to kick. So I think you start dropping backfield players, don't you? Which actually creates more space. But a lot of the times as defence, you think the attack will play it safe here. They'll just kick us the ball. They don't want to take the space we're offering them. Whereas Northampton, fair play to them, had the ambition. They had the ambition to take what in front of them and go, actually, we're going to play into the space, we're going to attack that, and we're going to go for it, and it reaped dividends. And that's the thing, I think, for the Bulls moving to play Northampton this weekend, yes, we want them to kick us the ball, but at the same time, we have to defend the entire rugby field from their try line all the way back to ours, because they will take space, whether it's in front of them or, you know, beside them, whatever they do. And that's the conundrum for defences now, is how do you, you know, you've got to set up to stop Northampton running, but then there's going to be space in behind, which they can use to chip kicks and all the rest of it. So it'll be, yeah, another game. It'll be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it will, because it ultimately changes the backfield, like you say, Coley. Suddenly you've got to like load up the front a bit more because they might run it. So then you might change your backfield setup, which then gives them more space to actually kick. So look, that sets them up quite nicely, doesn't it? I was going to say, how good is Courtney Law still? Like, for me, I reckon he is the best flanker I've ever played with in terms of six. Like, he is phenomenal. Like, where would you rank Courts, mate? Because I just look at him, I just think he is so good.
I think somebody that's come on in the past, well, probably since about 2019 and a bit before that, was his ball carrying. He's always been a great defender, always ferocious at belting people, and was a great line-out forward. But I think it's the attacking, it's probably his breakdown work has gone up through the roof in recent times in regards to stealing the ball. He shot the World Cup. He was phenomenal there. Like, every game he was getting two or three turnovers at the breakdown. And definitely, I think, you know, around the park offensively, attacking-wise, turning up in the wide channels or just carrying through people, he's a complete footballer, really.
We obviously were big fans of Doucetoir, Thierry Doucetoir. Would we put Courtney in that level?
Well, I think Doucetoir is always going to be my first love, so he's always going to be he's always going to have a piece of my heart in that regard, Ben. But yeah, I think in terms of probably all around, I think Doucetoir was very, probably more aligned defensively, whereas I think Courtney, if you're looking at a complete package of what he can do in attack, defence, set piece, Courtney's ahead of him, I would say.
We're going to go to an ad break, and when we're back, we will talk about how good Bordeaux were. We'll obviously touch on Quinns, who obviously took the win against Glasgow. So join us after the ad break.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
So whilst we were blowing around in the air trying to get to Dublin, the wind was also blowing down at Sandy Park when Exeter played Bath. And what about Ben Spencer's kick, mate? Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. It just hit a wall of wind, didn't it? And it was sort of like, you thought it was you're going to have to adjust for that. I've never kicked a ball in my life, Ben, so I'm just going to say that. But you obviously adjust for the wind and that kind of stuff. And then the ball went up and it just, yeah, you never see anything like it, really. Just hit a wall of wind and blew back.
It's often windy down there anyway. Like, even on like a sunny day, it's like windy as hell. But that looked just completely different level. And actually, then obviously Henry Slade's kick was from exactly the same spot. But he just buried it so far right and it just came around and whipped in. It's actually madness. I mean, that's such a hard thing. And it actually changes the way that you have to play the game, right? When you're playing against a wind that hard, you have to go multi-phase more. It's very hard to then kind of like use your kick strat, which, you know, both teams use a strong kick strategy as well. But it totally changes that. And I felt like Exeter just, I mean, even the kickoff, obviously, with Alfie Barbary, who spilt it, unfortunately, you know, those things happen. But like, it was literally like a paper bag and a hurricane moving all over the place, I should think. Can't judge it. Drops it, unfortunately. And obviously, Exeter pick up and score. Like, total chaos, the wind.
No, I would say, as you say, it changes the way you have to play. I remember, if you think about box kicks, you know, normal team would exit with a box kick. You stick it high in the air, get your chase underneath it, try and compete, get it back. But in that kind of weather, you stick a box kick up, and if you're playing in one direction, the box kick goes up and blows 50 metres further than you want it to go, and the other way it goes up and comes back on you, so all your fools are offside. So it's sometimes, if you're playing into the wind, you have to do away with the box kick, and in some regards you have to then have to play wide, kick balls, grubber balls along the floor, roll balls in behind people, because the wind obviously has less effect on that. But then that obviously means that you then are playing more rugby and you're at the will of defence and all the rest of it. So yeah, it has a massive, and also, as we know, if you flip that around and you are able to build a lead into the wind, you then decide to play with the wind in the second half, sort of turn the ball over, you kick it, and it's 50 metres down the end of the field. Whereas if you're playing into the wind, it's a lot harder. You have to run into the wind rather than kick it. So it's a massive effect on the game. And that's, I think, part of what Chiefs have mastered is the ability to play with the conditions down there.
They have, yeah. They know it inside out, and it looked like that. And, you know, doing a kick, doing a box kick in those conditions is so difficult. You know, you like say the place kick alone was bloody like madness, like absolute madness. But it looked like Slady just knew that kind of how the wind works down there. Obviously, Gareth Steenson was there for years and still there now. Like the amount of kicks that he kicked down there, he just kind of knew really. And maybe Spenny had given him a bit of an idea with having to put it even more further right, knowing it'll drag left so much like it did. I think from a nine's point of view, when you are box kicking in those conditions, like any young nines out there, if you are playing in really strong wind coming towards you, you know, you're still having been asked, let's say, to box kick, then one of the good cues is you've got to then kick it like you're kicking it as long as possible, and you can't kick it like a normal box kick. It will just sit up and it'll come back. You have to like punch it like so almost low, and it will then just sit up enough and then kind of get the distance you need to kind of still be contestable. But it's a tough old task. So they did pretty well. And how quick's Ted Hill, by the way?
Oh, rapid. I say, ability to pick the ball up and then run the length of the field, run 50 metres with the back line giving chase. He's a phenomenal athlete. I think that's has been as much since he was at Worcester, wasn't it? I say he's 6'5", tall, lean, athletic. Yeah, sound a bit jealous. But he, the fact that he was able to outsprint the entire back line tells you the athlete that he is.
Do you know what's horrible? Like if you're a back and a loose forward or even a hooker or anything. I remember I chucked an intercept once and Scott Britz caught it. And then I obviously turned to like chase him and I couldn't get anywhere near him. And I had like 60 meters to try and get him and I just couldn't get him. And it's that horrible feeling of like, oh my God, he's quick. He's seriously quick. Oh shit, he scored. Fuck, he's quick.
He'll slow down soon. He's not slowing down. He's not slowing down.
The gap is getting bigger.
He scored. Then you have to like pretend you got cramp or something.
Yeah, just collapse. Say you felt something neural.
Yeah.
Exeter now head to Toulouse, which I got to say is a monumental task because they put Racing away very convincingly today.
DuPont's back, Entermac's back. Toulouse are very strong without those two and have been so far this year. But to add those two back at this part of the season, you know, there's been a lot of tension around like La Rochelle and Leinster, but Toulouse are always... Toulouse, not gonna say, they can't be the dark horses for the championship, for the tournament, but they are because they're a phenomenal team, but they are. But they're probably everyone's favourite team in some regards. And I think, you know, the way they're playing at the minute, the way they dispatch Racing, they've got a ginormous, again, the French, they've got a ginormous forward pack. They've got some fantastic players and they, again, they're a great team to watch. I think that game was quite close for the first 35 minutes and I think that Toulouse basically just decided to go with a kick return. Oh, we'll just run this and ended up scoring and then the game sort of went their way and that was it.
I guess with Exeter, you know, they are a young team. You know, when you looked at how many players left last season, you know, how many sort of, I suppose, experience, big figurehead players left and their young team now, like phenomenal really. And I think they'll probably go there with the sort of mindset of it's a free swing, like we're going to Toulouse away and we can just chuck the kitchen sink at them and see. You know, they have a high press defence, Exeter do, they put you under a lot of pressure, and I think, you know, the way Toulouse play is pretty loose, but yeah, I just think that power, that's the biggest thing for Exeter. It's like when Exeter have a really strong defence and they fly off the line and cut your time and space away, it's how do you beat that? Well, often it comes to almost brute force, and that's what Toulouse have a lot of. And then they get an offload and then they're in behind you. And then the defence actually can't almost recover because they're quite tight and aggressive how they get off. So again, it'll be a good game. But I think, you know, I tip Toulouse probably to do the business there. And as you say, Coley, like, because Leinster and La Rochelle are on the other side of the pool almost, Toulouse is, you can't say they're dark horses because they're a phenomenal record in Europe. But sort of everyone's talking about La Rochelle, Leinster this weekend. And they're just quietly going about their business with easily good enough squad and how they play to actually win the whole tournament.
So, which leaves us with the final makeup of the quarterfinals. We have Quins who play Bordeaux. We'll start with Quins. They played Friday night. They played Glasgow. Glasgow scored early doors. Then Quins basically almost dominated the rest of the first half, built a big score. Glasgow came back into it. And Quins won it at the end with a sort of maul try, which is, you know, very Quins way of winning things with a maul try.
It was very Quinn's way of winning thing with the pushover try. Tell you what, yeah, no, Quinn sort of, they must be like kind of like a hard team to coach or like be a fan because they go out, and I know Glasgow scored early, but then they literally dominate. Like Mark is just like pulling the strings, making things happen. Crossfield kick to Estes, and who obviously scores in the corner, like just literally picking people off, like Quinns race into there, they're massive lead, and you're like, right, the game's done. Like, Quinns will come out again and kind of see it off, and then Glasgow score. Then they score again, you think, what? Like, they've been so dominant, and then it like totally flips on its head. But the penalty count was madness in terms of like the second half. Like, the ref seemed to have, we're not going to hate on refs, but there was a big penalty count in the second half. But
sometimes you find that in games, don't you, with you win the penalty count in the first half, but you know it's going to swing back around at some point, the momentum's going to go against you. So as a team, you obviously know you have to manage those periods of, or sometimes even when the penalty count's gone against you, like second half, I think things will come back around our way. So Spurs, those ability to manage momentum. And sometimes if you're so dominant in a half of the first period of the first half, it could almost hurt you in the second half, because referees are a bit more, it's human nature, referees are a bit more, you have to sort of work harder for penalties and opposition sometimes. I'm not trying to level it up, I wouldn't say that, but the pendulum swings back the other way. So, you know, Quinns is a great way of, they found a way to win the game, which is what Europe's about, basically.
They sure did. They sure did. And they obviously now have the luxury of heading to Bordeaux. And how good did Bordeaux look?
Wow. Yes, they're a team as well. You watch them play, you make a line break, they score. It's jouer, free flow in French rugby. But, you know, they're getting behind you and they are deadly.
They got ball carriers. They got flair players. They move it around. You know, Penno is pretty bloody electric. They did a great little scrub, actually, where play it back inside to Penno, goes clean through, pick him off. The tap penalty was pretty clever, little move. A lot of little integrate, like, hands and pulling out the back and doing all that. And then, who is their number eight? Oh, my God. He literally ran down the wing and then flicks it around the back for a nice little try as well. But the thing is with Quinns is, they will play in a way which kind of, if Bordeaux scores, Quinns score, then Quinns score Bordeaux. And if it gets that loose game, like a real loose sort of way, and they sort of drag him into that, then you don't never know a Quinns, mate. They have so many points in them. They can just score so, like, out of nothing. And it depends if you know, if Bordeaux probably, you know, with their physical power, maybe go like that. But if they get a bit loose and everything like that, that could really play in Quinns' hand. And Bordeaux can play like that because they just move it around a bit. So it'll be an interesting game, actually. And I think, again, Quinns going to a French club, a bit like Exeter, you kind of go in there to a really tough place and you kind of just got a free swing in it. And I think Quinns, the way that they play, could put them under some heat, you know.
If the game gets loose and it goes, teams go toe-to-toe, Quinns can deal with that. I think, you know, the Pre Bordeaux probably try and score in bunches in some regards, like most French teams. They'll try and use momentum, the power game, play on top of you, getting behind you, and almost have purple patches of where they can score in bunches. But say with Quinns, if it goes score for score, you know, Quinns with the finishers, Caden Murley was on fire at the weekend. But also Quinns can, as we've seen, they can control the tempo of the game, and they're more their scrum. They're a good set-piece team, and yeah, it'll be interesting going to Bordeaux. The noise that'll be in the atmosphere, in the stadium atmosphere, that you'd back Bordeaux. But I say Quinns can easily silence the crowd with their ability to score from nothing, and that's when the game will get titchy. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, it's another, I've bagged Europe so far this year for being a bit off, but actually now we've got to the sort of quarterfinals. There are four games that really look forward to watching.
Toulouse will take on Exeter, Bordeaux-Begler will take on Quinns, Leinster-La Rochelle, and Northampton versus the Bulls. So some absolute cracking quarterfinals to look forward to this weekend. Also, the Challenge Cup was on, and but big news this week, I suppose, from the teams out of the Challenge Cup is that Kitsoff is leaving Ulster at the end of the season and heading back to, I don't think it's confirmed, but it sounds like he's heading back to the Stormers, where he joined from. Kitsoff, mate, obviously renowned for scrummaging, and you would have locked horns with him, being the tight head and him being the loose head. What's he like?
He's very strong. I think one of the things with Kitsoff, Stephen Kitsoff, you've seen over his career is the fact that he seems to have, I think when he first came on, he often used to come off the bench to Africa, and he was brought the power. He was also a very good jackler of the ball over the breakdown. Whereas I think, like, you've seen him probably evolve into that starting role for South Africa, starting role, and he's always been a captain leader. But I think now you see he's more, I want to say, controlled in his actions. He still has explosive moments. He's still a phenomenal player, but he plays probably the more complete game. I think probably when he used to come off the bench, I'm not going to say he was reckless in any way, shape or form, but he had to bring an impact. And I think with his starting role now, he's the sort of complete prop and does everything that you want newly said to do. And I think he's one of the best in the world. I think he'll be a big loss for Ulster. I think apparently they're going to save some money and they've got some other focus points, and he's going back to South Africa. So yeah, he'll be a loss, but I think, you know, it's just, again, he'll get to South Africa and South Africa get stronger as a nation and as a country.
It also means that your twin brother, Brock Harris, the 39-year-old loose head for the Stormers, he means that he'll get a little bit more rest and rotation with Kitsoff if he returns. So
he's definitely older than me. I mean, we played against him earlier in the year, and Brock Harrison, we had a laugh because we were both playing tight end, and it was, how are you? Yeah, I'm old and stiff. Yeah, so am I. Cool. So that was the conversation. But yeah, actually, Ben, on a different note, I came off, I don't know if you saw, it's been April Fools. It was first of April Fools. Someone put out there that I was joining the NFL. I actually came off the field at the weekend, got subbed off, and an Irish kid was like, Dan Cole. I was like, yeah. He's like, are you joining the NFL? I wish, unfortunately, I'm 37 next month and I can't bend over. They don't need me. But if they do, I'm here and I'm willing to eat to put on some weight.
You are totally available. You are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can do WrestleMania as well.
Coley, thanks, mate. And what a bloody day. What a day of travel. But we still got a pod done.
We said we were going to do it straight from the airport. We have. And now I am going to have a shower and I'm going to bed.
Yeah, I'm shattered.
For the love of rugby.
If you want to drop us a line, get involved with our socials.
Just search for @ Love of Rugby. And if you've listened to all our episodes and need another podcast, go and find Joe Marler's Things People Do. For the Love of Rugby is ad-free on Amazon Music. If you listen on Apple, you can get it ad-free for £1 a week.
See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.